Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire.
All right. What's up, guys? Thanks for joining our show this week. Today, we've got our friend Victor from Gainesville, Florida. Victor's going to talk to us a little bit about his experience with flipping homes. He is a successful house flipper doing about 30 homes a year right now in Gainesville, Florida. Victor, welcome to the show. We appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So Victor, tell us how you got started in real estate.
Yeah, so for sure. So I went full time in real estate about 2.5 years ago, so about 2018. So what happened, I was working like more of a corporate job in healthcare. I was like an administrator for a home health agency, like helping to run it, office work, that sort of thing, typical 9-to-5. I quickly found like it wasn't really getting me where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
Like financially, personally, like I guess spiritually as well, where like my budget at the end of the month, like I maybe save like an extra $500
yeah.
a month. And I was like, okay, well, wait a second. How long is it going to take for me to hit any of my goals here?
Yeah.
So luckily always had like the real estate bug or always, you know, had that interest in real estate. So like, you know, what if I start just dabbling with real estate and, you know, make it happen that way? And basically that's what happened. Got, you know, first two deals were wholesale deals, then got into flipping. I've tried a ton of stuff, you know, kind of Airbnb rentals, really happy with the flipping. So I've just been doing that over and over again. And yeah, here we are today.
Nice. I love it.
I want to dig in a little bit more because I feel like there could be a lot of people that join on this show that are stuck between being at that corporate job or being in something they're not happy with. And I want to talk about what your goals were, because I feel like the fact that you had goals is probably what propelled you to take that scary jump out of the consistent, predictable income into real estate.
I don't know if it was like a specific goal, like I want to make X. Like it was more like I want to make more because like whatever I'm doing now just isn't working. So it was like, hey, this, it was just a sense of dissatisfaction from the core of it. Like, you know, where I'm at today, okay, this isn't, I don't like this. So we got to make a change. I don't think when I started, I was like, hey, I want to make this much. I want to make this much.
Yeah.
I guess I always had the mind, like the six figures in mind and that sort of thing. But I was just like, hey, I'm cut out for more. I can do more and I'm kind of stuck here. The other thing was, and maybe your listeners can relate to this, like I would perform really well at that job. And like they'd set goals. I'd hit the goals. I'd do a really good job, make their life a lot easier. And then like my compensation wouldn't scale to that.
Yeah.
So it's like, I help them, you know, grow the business, double the business. And like, I'm still where I'm at.
Yeah.
So that was part of the frustration or whatever, that I wanted to like get into this sort of thing. And, that's just what motivated me to move forward there.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. So first two deals were wholesale deals. How did you find those deals? How did you get started? Like what were those first steps that you took? And then did you do those deals while you were still in that job, or did you just cut that job cold turkey and roll into real estate?
Yeah. So it was kind of both in terms of rolling into it. Like I was still working the job while I was getting up and running.
Okay.
Luckily I was doing like Uber on the weekends. And back then I was living in Chicago. So in the weekend, like Friday, Saturday, a little bit of Sunday, I could make like $500 a week, like on a weekend.
Yeah.
Just driving at night. So I was like, oh shit, I was making more there than in my job actually.
Yeah.
So if that gives you any sort of context.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. Let me do that. So that helped the transition. So like while I was transitioning to real estate, like I was still doing the Ubering, still doing the Lyft. So that helped. That was the transition basically. So how I got the first deal was cold calling.
Oh, nice.
Cold calling works. It still works today. And, you know, it's a very impactful way to get deals. Is the right way to do it, a wrong way to do it? Happy to get into those details here in a bit. Basically got the first two deals cold calling, got a list, started calling them. Based on their situation, I could basically help out and then, you know, assign the deal and made it happen. So first wholesale deal, made about like probably 3,000. Second one made about 3,500.
Okay.
And then started getting into flipping after that. And,
you
know, it became a different story, but it got me started, you know, that first check. I was like, damn, this is okay. I think there's something here, you know?
Yeah. It proves to you that this is actually real, right? People can tell you all day long, like, hey, do real estate, you'll make money. But until you get that check yourself, you're like, oh, how real is this? So you were in, you were in Chicago when you were driving Uber and did your first two wholesales.
Yes.
Okay.
So I was kind of transitioning from from Chicago to Gainesville okay. in Florida. So it was kind of like I kind of started there. It's kind of gray area. It's not like, you know, easy peasy. Gotcha. It's like kind of gray area, like while I was learning to do it.
Okay. And were those wholesales in Florida?
They're in Florida.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Cool.
I feel like those first deals are instrumental. Like if it's so important to hit them, whether you make a dollar or $100,000, the dollar amount doesn't matter on your first couple of deals. It just matters that you do them.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And then the point is, like, once you, at least for me, like once you get your first deal, it's like, okay, I know what I need to do. So it just becomes like an easy, repeatable process, like input gets output. Okay, now I do A, then I do B, then I do C, and then that's going to get me Z, which is that check. And I know a lot of beginners definitely have this, like, they're like, oh, what do I do next? What's my next step? What's my first step? So it's kind of like this haze, is there this fog that they're walking through to hit their goals. But especially when you get that first deal, it's suddenly like, okay, cool. It's clear, the fog lifts. And then it's suddenly like, okay, cool. I know where I need to go and I know what I need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you said there. If you do A, B, and C, you wind up at Z. We talk about this all the time on the show, actually. Like, the results are the results based on the actions that you take. Like, the results are always going to be there. You just have to take the action steps and repeat those. And the results, like, the results aren't going to change. The results are what they are. You got to take the steps to make it happen. You don't just jump to the end to the results. Or if you don't take the action steps, you're not going to get there. So I think I just love harping on that, as A, B, and C does lead to Z. The alphabet is the alphabet. Take the steps and you'll wind up at the result. It's that simple.
So you actually talked a little bit about cold calling, that there's a right and a wrong way.
Yeah.
I think that could be some gold information for people that are listening.
Yeah.
So do you want to dive into maybe some of the things you learned that were not the right way, and then break it down on what you're doing that's successful?
Yeah. Happy to break that down. So if with the cold calling, there's a lot of things to go over there. With the cold calling, to get specific, like the tonality and like how you're coming across is key. Yeah. So when I was, my initial script, and I actually like went through a ton of iterations to where I'm at now. My initial script was like, hey, my name is Victor. I'm a real estate investor. I'm looking to buy properties. Like, you know, are you looking to sell a property? Something like that. So it was really like, I don't want to say salesy, but it was kind of salesy. So it's kind of like really right off the bat, like you're asking for something, like you're trying to get something from. So it just came across as salesy. And then my other issue I would make is I was just talk too fast. I would like, just talk really fast. And that's another key point. Like, you just got to slow down. Cause if you come across as like a telemarketer, cause that's probably the worst thing you can do. If you come across as a telemarketer, cause it's so easy. It's that knee jerk reaction. Like, they just hang up, or they don't talk to you. Like, hey, I'm not interested in selling. And they hang up on you. Yeah. So you got to do literally everything the opposite of a telemarketer. You got to come across, and it sounds like that's the only phone call you're going to make that day. That's a good piece of advice. Just to be like relaxed and like slow down your tone, maybe 10-20%, make the focus more on them. Just to reach out that way. So there's a ton of stuff with a cold calling, but to give you like a high level principle, like really anti-sales, anti-telemarketer, and you're going to be doing a lot better than most of the folks out there.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. So Jeff and I recently started following scripts. Before, we thought we were just good salesmen, and so we didn't rely on scripts. We obviously hired a coach, and the coach was like, no, you need to be using scripts. So I think one of the key takeaways, like especially based off what you just said, as far as like, we don't necessarily do our cold calls anymore, but we will touch base on all the hot leads ourselves still. And one of the biggest differences in the way we treat those leads versus how we treated leads in the past, and why I think our success rate is fastly climbing, is exactly what you said. We don't add pressure to anybody. Yeah. There's no reason to. I would rather spend less time on that phone with that person who's not motivated and just keep hitting numbers, like a high volume of leads to hit the people that are motivated, than to sit there and try to focus on someone that doesn't have that motivation. So I'm never going to push anybody into a deal. And I think that is a gold nugget, right?
Like,
you're never going to convince someone to sell their house to you at a discount. But if you match the value you're providing with somebody who needs that value, and you're actually helping and creating a win-win situation, that's where deals are found. But we don't
know. Spot on.
We don't.
Yeah. And just to add to that, I definitely found, especially a lot of beginners, just to save a lot of their time, I always get the question, like, what if they say no? Like, you ask if they want to sell their house and they say no, like, should I try to convince them or should I try to talk them into it? And the answer is no, just as you're nodding there, you know, because it's going to be an uphill battle. Like, hey, first convince them they want to sell, which is going to be tough, and convince them to sell at a discount. Yeah. So that's going to be, so don't spend your time. It's not a fit. A big part of the cold calling is like seeing if there is a sale to be made before trying to make the sale, like trying to quote unquote make the sale.
That's
how do you do
that? Can I even help this person? Can I even does this person even want to sell? Can I even help this person? Yeah. Once you establish there's an opportunity to help, then you can figure out price or condition and all that sort of, how long do they want to close, all that stuff.
Yeah. You got to realize it's a numbers game when you're doing cold calling or even the follow-up stuff, man. Like it's really just a numbers game. Like you got to have a high volume of calls to close deals. You don't convince people to sell your house. You just negotiate an asset that wants to be sold. So how do you go about determining motivation? I like hammering in because everybody has their different ways of how they do it. So what's your go-to on really determining if somebody has a motivation to sell? Do you have a one-liner you use or a script that you use for that?
I don't think so. I think it's just I think the biggest thing, here's another tip, is really let them talk.
Yeah.
A lot of beginners, they talk a lot and they talk for the person. So just asking open-ended questions, let the other person do the talking. This is another good sales philosophy. If you're doing 80% of the talking, you're losing. So you need to let them do 80% of the talking. So you're basically asking these open-ended questions just to better ascertain. And the vast majority of the time, people just tell me I want to sell this house because I have kids and I can't handle this and I'm in a different state and I've had bad renters. I just want to get rid of it. That's typically what happens. People just tell me.
Yeah.
So asking open-ended questions to give you an example, what's the condition of the property? When are you looking to sell this place? Or why are you looking to sell this place so quickly?
Yeah.
So these open-ended questions are what can you tell me about the property? These open-ended questions where they're going to really talk and open up. And the other thing there is the key with the tonality, just like we've been talking about. If you have genuine curiosity in your tone, versus more of a robotic tone, it's going to come across a lot better.
Yeah.
Hey, so can I go back and pull some of those things you just said out again? Because you guys are listening, I would write this down. Victor just dropped some gold nuggets on you. So first you talked about active listening, right? So that's huge. I mean, just people in general, they want to talk and they want to be heard. And if you're the person that gives them that satisfaction of being someone that listens to them that day, they're going to share with you, right?
Yep.
And then the second thing that you had said was active listening. I had a really great point.
Tonality.
And tonality. And that's huge because it's so true. I'm naturally a very excited person. So when I'm on the phone, I have to tone myself down. Because these people, they aren't, if they're selling a distressed property, they're not in an exciting place in life. So I try to bring myself down and match myself to where they're at. And everyone might have their own perspective on that.
Yeah.
But if I hop on the phone and I'm like, hey, Victor, how's it going? Are you looking to sell your house? You're going to be like, click. But instead, if we hop on, we're like, hey, my name's Noah. I'm in the neighborhood pretty often. I'm looking to buy some houses here. Have you thought about potentially selling? Mm-hmm. And then listening.
Yeah. Right?
But that calming down. The other thing I think you had brought up was slowing down. I really liked that as well. Yeah. We actually have pauses in our scripts.
Yep.
So intentionally just shutting up and letting there be awkward silence.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We found that the pauses have led to people then they get in their head what is this guy?
Yeah.
When somebody pauses in a conversation, your natural thought is to go, what does this person want me to say? And then then you start saying that you start providing information rather than me having to pull it out. The other thing that I think has been crucial, and again, I don't know if it's fortunate or not, but I've never done a cold call in my life. I probably never will. I'm our follow-up guy. I'm great at I'm great at the follow-up and acquisition sales calls. Don't get me on a cold call because I can't slow down. I'm a loud, fast moving guy. It's just who I am. I know my strengths, right? But one of the things that our coaches taught us was going for no. So that's one of our things. If we go for no before they go for no, then they're not gonna go for no. So we, in our script, we say, hey, if you have any interest in what, or we say, hey, what our goal is to get you a cash offer for your property, let you know what it qualifies for. If that works, awesome. Hey, if not, no worries. We just want to let you know what your options are and what it looks like to work with us. And then all of a sudden, that just relieves this pressure because it's I'm not trying to close you. I'm not trying to close the sale. Actually, I just told you, you don't have to sell me your property. And then it's this reverse psychology. It's worked on lenders. I've been hey, actually, hey, no worries if you don't want to land on this project. I know it's seeming a little stressful right now. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I'm wiring the money to closing. Like, it's just, we, mm-hmm. this power of going for no has really been key mm-hmm. in our business. So, all right. So two wholesales, and then you jump to flipping. What made you make that jump from wholesale to flip? And then what got you comfortable taking that step? Cause wholesaling is like, that's like a sales and marketing company really. And then your contract is the asset. Flipping is a whole different beast. Like flipping, you got general contractors, you got lining up private money, you're actually taking the deal down, you have all these steps. So what made you comfortable doing that? And then kind of what motivated you to take that step?
Yeah, so I was doing these deals, and I had in the back of my mind, like, hey, wholesaling's cool. I got to do some real volume if I want to make some money. So yeah. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start taking these deals down. So that was in the back of my head. There was a deal I came across at cold calling. The person was motivated. The numbers made sense. I started to like send in buyers, like, hey, take a look at this place. At that point, I was still pretty unestablished, didn't have a great buyers list. Also, Gainesville was pretty unestablished. We're kind of like a secondary market.
Okay.
Now it's a little bit different, but back then, like, not a lot of buyers. So not a lot of like real buyers.
Okay.
So I had a couple of people walk it. One guy walked it. He's like, hey, I needed to be at like, I was trying to sell it like 120, and he was trying to get it for like 80. And he basically told me like, hey, how we typically do it, we want to make 50,000 on a flip. So that's how they didn't do 70% rule. They didn't do anything like that. They're like, hey, we want to make, like, our net profit is 50.
Yeah.
So the people there were really looking for home run deals.
Yep.
I was like, oh, shit. Well, I still believed in the deal. Like, hey, there's still potential here. I'm running the comps. I'm running the numbers. There's still potential here. So all the, I kind of struck out trying to assign it, like try to sell it to basically, cash buyer. And I was like, oh shit. Well, I still see the deal. So I basically started shopping around in terms of like fix and flip. So, what I did essentially found a money partner. Back then I had like a low 500 credit score, maybe a couple thousand in the bank. So I couldn't just buy it cash on my own. So I was like, okay. Basically found a money partner within my network, and like, they put in all the funds to buy it, to renovate it, to sell it. And obviously I found the deal. I would help out with the renovations. I would help to sell it, just manage the entire thing. And then we would split the profit. So that's how the concept of the money partner came around. And that's how it went down. So basically just took down the deal and got a slice of the profit, and basically started doing more of that, and then grabbed another money partner. And then I started to be able to do my own deals. And then, here we are today.
Yeah. I love that, man, because a lot of people, they're wholesaling, then they want to flip. They're like, oh, I don't have the money, or hey, I don't have the credit score, or I don't have, I'm not bankable, or whatever it is. There are always ways to structure deals. Like, if you want to get it done, you will get it done. It's really that simple. You just have to put your mind to it and be creative. So going out and finding a joint venture money partner, right? Like, you probably on that deal gave up way more percentage than you were hoping for, but you got your first flip, and now you're going to do 30 this year, and it wouldn't have happened without taking that first step. And people get this mindset of like, oh no, this is my deal. I found this. I deserve all the flip profits. Like, okay, well, can you get the loan? Well, no, but I still want as much out of this as I can. Whereas like, you really got to switch that perspective to an abundance mindset of like, there'll be more deals. I will give up some skin in the game right now so that I can get the ball rolling, so I can make this deal happen. And so I think that's key. I love hearing a high level player be like, hey, when I started, I wasn't in the position to get the loan, but I was smart enough to realize I wasn't and took on a money partner to make that happen. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you, so if you're a newbie investor and you're hearing that, you just, all they heard was took on money investor, can you break that down a little bit more for us? Like, how did you approach that conversation? Did you have some objections you had to overcome? How did you convince that person to trust you with, I'm assuming, at least $100,000, if not more, right?
Yeah. So the numbers on that, when we bought it, 105, we ended up putting it in about 30, and then we sold it for like 170.
Okay.
Nice. So we made about 28K net profit, which is, I mean, that's great.
Yeah, that's great. That.
We should have made more. Like, if it was me today, we would have made a ton more, but you live and you learn, 100%. So to speak. Yeah. So, so basically what happened, again, I struck out with the assignment fees. So started fishing around on it. And basically like how I proposed the deal was I had the numbers there.
Yeah.
Like I had like, hey, we're buying it for this much. Hey, here's the pictures. Here's how much I think it needs. And then the final thing was like, hey, this is what we can sell it for. Like, so I was shopping like, hey, work with me and we can make X amount of profit. So that was the exciting part. So I shopped the benefit. basically. So especially with people who have like cash sitting in the bank, like they'll make, you know, 0.1% interest, not really doing much there. You got inflation going on, all that good stuff. So like, why not put it to work? Why not make it happen for you? For them, it was basically the pitch. Objections. I think the biggest one was like, hey, I want to see the place. I think that was it. So we still had access. It was vacant. So that made it super easy. So just like, hey, I want to go see the place. I'm like, okay, cool. Made that happen. And then the money partner saw the property, and it wasn't bad. It was just like mostly outdated. So they saw that potential. They're like, hey, you know, new flooring, new paint, new kitchen. This place is going to be fantastic. So that's, they saw it through that lens. So that happened, you know, that worked out luckily. And that was pretty much it. And, you know, if you say like, hey, we want to make, you know, 40K on this one. Now I think that was the initial projection. Like, hey, we can make 40K on this one. That's like, really, you know, do you want to make what you make at your job in, you know, in 6 months in one deal, or
passively,
you
know, let's make this happen? I like what you said there, shop the benefit. I actually love that verbiage. I haven't used that before, but that's brilliant. That's what we always try and do when we pitch a deal to a lender. We used to be like, hey, could we used to call it like a funding request. Like, hey, here's the funding request. And I was like, dude, we got to scrap that verbiage. That's me coming to you for money. When I send my private money lenders a deal now, I'm not coming to them for money. I am presenting them with an opportunity. So when you say shop the benefit, I think that's huge. And like, literally, it sounds dumb. Like, just to switch words gives it power, but it really does. So for the newbies that listen to this, like, watch your verbiage, watch what you say, and always like come to the table with something, not asking for something, right? You don't get if you ask, but if you present an opportunity that somebody can invest in. And having the mindset like you do, like putting in the work, going, okay, I know this person probably has money in the bank and they're only getting this return. Well, here's what my return looks like in comparison. Hey, you can make 40K on this. Well, if you partner with me, make 50%, you'll make 20. That's literally a third of what you're going to make at your job, a fourth, depending on how much you make, doing nothing but passively giving me money for 3 months. Like, having that, those numbers and that knowledge really put you in a good position to get that first loan. I think that's huge.
It makes a big difference. It's funny because we just updated our private money packet. So we now include a chart, and it's a comparison of the different investment vehicles that you could put your money into. So it'll compare like the stock market, CDs. like a CD, a 401k, and then private investing with True City Home Buyers. And below that, it's the risk, the control, and the return rated from high, medium to low. It's kind of cool because people can compare it, and they, you know, they look at it and they go, I mean, because we pay like on average like 11% to our private money vendor, private money lenders, which is a little bit more than, you know, the hard money lenders would charge us, or, you know, whatever. But it's worth it. Like, we want them to win. We can win. We can afford to pay it. So we're trying to create, you know, a win-win for everybody. But anyways, it's cool because they can look at it and then they go, oh, interesting. So high return, low risk. I'm secured to physical property that I can see, touch, and feel. And if these guys screw up, I'll just own that property.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds too good to be true. Where do I sign?
Yeah. And I think what you said too was really cool, is the objection that you got was not about like you or your credit worthiness or you, because you're not the asset. Like, in traditional lending, you're kind of the asset. Like, my credit score backs this, my job backs this, I need a car loan or a bank loan or a personal house loan. You're what they're kind of lending against is your value, right? And flipping, it's asset-based loans. So like, that's what you have to wrap your mind around as a new investor, is like, you are not the asset. You are not what matters. Like, obviously you need to know what you're doing and have a little bit of credibility, but the asset is what matters. So the objection that you mentioned was, hey, what does the house look like? Not, hey, show me your bank statements, right? Like, no private lender has ever asked for my bank statements. It's, hey, what are the numbers on the flip? What does the house look like? And that kind of stuff. So
actually, we had one guy ask for our bank statement.
We had one guy ask for it. That was a weird one, man. He's trying to get up to like 3.5 million with us though. So I was like, okay, if you're going to go that big, I'll show you my bank statements and show you that we can take down this project without your money. So, okay, cool. So that was first flip. And now you're on track to do 30. What kind of, we're big systems guys. Well, we're training ourselves to be big system guys. We're big believers in systems. We haven't been the best implementers in systems, but we're getting there. What systems and operating kind of stuff did you put in place to allow for the company to scale up? And then as you started to grow, just what did that look like for you guys?
I think the biggest thing is just like something daily is how I would do it. Like, daily habits. And then I have like weekly habits. Just a lot of stuff. It's super simple, especially when you're starting out. Like for me, in terms of like a CRM, I don't have any like crazy things like, was it Skip Beast or, I can't remember the names of them, but there's like Podio, like all these high level CRMs. So I just have a simple CRM that's free. I use HubSpot. It gets the job done, especially with like my lead volume. Like if I was getting hundreds of leads per month, that's a little bit different. Yeah. I'm getting, you know, dozens maybe.
Okay.
So that's how I make it happen. So it's things like that, like simple things, especially when you're getting started, like you don't have to go crazy or like buy this, buy that.
Yeah.
And then like, you're not making any progress. So something like something cheap. I have a system for keeping in touch with wholesalers. I just have it on my calendar. It repeats every Monday. And then I just reach out to whoever's on the list. So just keeping it as simple as possible. Complex systems come from simple systems. So you want to, you know, create simple systems first that you actually adhere to and use. And then we can, you know, make it more robust and, you know, add, you know, different layers to it. But like, I'd rather have a simple system that I stick to than a complex system that, you know, I never touch.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that. That's huge.
That is for sure getting pulled out and becoming like an Instagram clip. That was so good. Have 100% simple systems that you understand. So many people are like, well, I want to be a big dog. I want to do 100 wholesales or 30 flips. So I have to have the systems they have. No, you're going to get this complex system and you're going to drown in it. You're not going to know how to manage it. You're going to be shelling out money. Like, build this simple system, understand it, and then grow it. That's really good.
Yeah, that's like, it's like sticking a 16-year-old in a Ferrari that doesn't know how to drive stick shift.
Yeah.
What's the point? They can't drive that. Put them in the 1999 Honda Civic and let them figure out how to drive and ding it up, right? And then once they're an experienced driver, you get the nicer car.
Yeah.
You don't want to start off with a big complicated system when you don't even know how to use it. And simple scales. That's brilliant, man.
Yeah.
So at what point did you start adding those systems?
Pretty early. So I was doing, you know, doing the deals, doing the whole thing. So I added the CRM, added the stuff. I'm pretty much still using like the same systems. Like maybe I've added a couple, but I'm still keeping it pretty good. I also do another thing. This is a good tip. I plan out my day ahead of time.
Yeah.
So like in the morning is how I typically do it. Like I plan out my day, like this is when I need to do this. This is when I need to do this. So I just plan it out and break it out. So that makes it easier for me to keep on top of everything. Because if you have everything just in your head, like you're going to miss something.
Yeah.
So I think just having that productivity hack and just planning out your day adds a lot of value.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I've typically, I haven't, you know, kept it that crazy. Again, 30 might seem like a big number. Once you get to 30, you'll realize like, hey, 30 is not that much.
Yeah.
There's always, at least for flips, like there's always like a flurry of activity. Like we gotta get this done. And then suddenly like it's nothing. Like you're just sitting, hurrying up and waiting. And then it's like flurry of activity. Yeah. And then like, so you have more deals going on at the same time. So it spaces out pretty evenly. Like this one's got a lot going on. So it's like juggling if I could, you know, attune it to something.
Yeah.
And liken it.
Yeah, for sure. What is the setup of your team look like? Like, do you have other folks in your company or do you have like a team outside of your company that you've built? What did you set up to allow you to do 30 in a year?
Yeah, it's pretty small. I have a project manager and then I have a VA and that's it.
Wow.
So it's pretty lean. So that seems to work. We get about half our deals from wholesalers. So I don't know how you'd count them in terms of the deal. I guess that's more like an outside thing. I mean, we have contractors, that sort of thing, but we keep it pretty lean and it seems to be working so far. So,
okay. So then
that's really impressive actually to run 30 flips on a lean team. And I think that like bootstrap principle, it's very evident within you that you like to bootstrap things.
Yeah.
So I could tell you're not spending another dollar until your previous dollar has made you at least the multiple on that first spend.
Yeah.
And I think that's the smart way to grow a business.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So that project manager, he runs your general contractors. Is that your setup? And then the GCs do the flips?
Pretty much. It's more of, so there's basically three models in terms of like doing renovations. So the first model is like do it yourself. Like you're lifting the paintbrush, you're doing the flooring, like you're, you know, messing around with the electrical. So that's do it yourself.
Yep.
The middle model is like done with you. So like you hire a painter. Okay. Gets the paint done. You hire a flooring guy, gets the flooring done. That's like done with you. So more like a project manager.
Yeah.
Third is more like that general contractor model where like, hey, I just want to pay you a check. They take care of everything A to Z. So that's the third model.
Yeah.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with either model. It's just a trade-off. So you're either, you know, saving time and it's costing you money with regards to like the general contractor, or it's costing you time, but it's saving you money in the case of, you know, do it yourself. So you just got to pick and choose. So basically how the project manager handles it, they take care of, like, they hire the painter, pay the painter, they hire the flooring guy,
okay,
take care of the flooring. So it's kind of that middle model, but with a project manager is how I've been doing it.
Okay, nice.
I like it, man.
That's cool. Smart.
Well, hey, so for anyone looking to get started in real estate, do you have some books or podcasts that you'd recommend people check out? So maybe something that
helped. Well, other than your guys' podcast, I would, I don't know. I would recommend, if anything, like to actually start taking action on this. Like, I got a ton of value from going to local meetups, local RIA groups.
Yeah.
So that's what I recommend. Because one thing to read a book, but there's like that mental disassociation. Like, maybe they're in a different state, or like, you know, it's just like, it's less relevant. But if you're meeting people in your city or in your state, and they're doing deals and they have done deals, it suddenly becomes more real. And especially like if you build a good connection with them, build a good network, like anytime you have a problem, you can give them a call, which is super helpful. That's helped me a ton in the past. So that's what I'd recommend for your listeners. Like, yes, books, podcasts are great. But if you can actually get out there and meet people, it becomes more real. And then if you have like five people you know who are doing deals, like, you're going to become the sixth.
Yeah,
that's 100%. Huge, man. Yep. We appreciate that. How can people reach you if they have questions about wholesaling, flipping, if they're in Florida? What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, for sure. So I flip houses myself. I also mentor people on how to flip houses nationwide. So if you want to get a hold of me, Facebook's the best way. I have a free Facebook group, Six Figure House Flipper. So if you want to join that, or if you want to look me up on Facebook, just Victor Yurchek. My name's spelled pretty unique, so you should find me pretty easy. And then, yeah, you can. I have the free Facebook group, tons of resources in there. I have like repair estimate guides, scripts. You know, I go over my deals, like a deep breakdown, like, this is how much this costs, this is how much this costs, this is how I messed up, or this is what I did wrong, or did right. So if folks want to reach out that way, I'm happy to help. If they're interested in the mentorship, great. If they're not, that's totally fine. There's lots of great, you know, resources, free stuff in there just to help people take them to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah. So guys, we'll definitely put the link to Victor's Facebook below in the show notes. So if you want to go check out his page, follow him, get some of his content, that's the best way to do that. So Victor, thank you so much for hopping on, man. It was really fun to chat with you, and you dropped a lot of good, really good, detailed information that I think a lot of people will get from. So
yeah, man, we really appreciate it. I have one question for you before we go. The logo behind you says Six Figure House Flipper. Have you ordered the 7 to replace the 6 yet? Because doing 30 flips, you're going to get there pretty quick, man.
I should hit 7 figures flipping probably next year.
Okay. Because
my average net is about 30K on a flip. So 30 times 30 is about 900. Yep. So about next year, I'll probably order it.
There we go.
That's awesome, dude.
33, 34 gets you there.
I don't think you should get rid of the sign. I think the 6 figure just needs to go on another wall. And it's
there we go.
And then it's,
or maybe like a line crossing it out.
Yeah, there you go. I love it, man.
That would be super cool.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thanks, man. We really appreciate you jumping on with us, brother.
That was a lot of fun, man. We'll talk to you soon. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.